All right, welcome into Armchair Champions, a new show here on Aggie Radio, and we're talking about sports. And it's called Armchair Champions because, well, we're champions in our own armchairs. Like, we know what people should have done to do better. And I mean, if they would have just listened to us, they would be champions too. So, yeah. I am Ethan Chadwick.
And I'm Jason Walker.
And it's Tuesday. I used to not have to get up so early on Tuesday, but it's okay.
Yeah, Tuesday, the day after Monday. Gotta love it. The day when the real week actually begins, we're not just hungover from the weekend.
See, my week does still start on Monday. I'm always kind of in the same state where I'm tired and I don't want to be there, but I still do stuff.
Yeah, well, I think people are just always tired throughout the entire week. It's not just Monday. Yeah. People just hate every day of the week, and not just Monday.
What yeah, I'm always tired because I always stay up too late doing stuff. Like last night, I watched The Dark Knight Rises because Sunday night I watched Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, so I had to finish the trilogy. And I even had a break in the middle where I went and played basketball, but yeah, so that finished close to midnight, and then I was still messing around on NCAA football 2014. And so I was doing that, and then after that I took a really long shower because I was gross from playing basketball. But yeah, once again I found myself going to sleep after 1 o'clock in the morning.
Hey, your night seemed to sound a lot more exciting than mine. I just flit around on the computer.
Well, I mean, mostly it's just me watching something on either Netflix or something and playing Xbox, so it's not really that exciting most of the time. I just happened to go play basketball last night with someone. So, I mean, that was fun, but it's not usually very exciting. So.
Yeah, usually just sit around or go outside and play Pokemon Go, since that's the newest thing nowadays.
Yeah, but that would involve more effort than I feel like giving, so like I usually just sit on my couch and hope that a Pokemon comes to me.
Yeah, I do that sometimes, just open it up, sitting there on my desk, like, oh, a Pokemon finally decided to show up.
Finally! Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, I want to jump into some...
There are two kind of big things, really the only super exciting things that happened over the weekend was, first, I can't remember which order they happened, but first, kind of the showdown between Von Miller and the Denver Broncos finally came to an end, and... Von Miller got a 6-year, $114 million deal with $70 million guaranteed.
Which is the most ever for anyone that isn't a quarterback.
Yeah, and it is pretty crazy. And I thought it was really good because I was not looking forward to not seeing Von Miller on the field.
Right.
Even though I don't like the Broncos. And
oh, shame.
Yeah.
Shame, man.
I am an outsider here because I'm a New England Patriots fan. And
yeah, you can leave.
Yeah. I usually get that reaction when I tell people. They ask me, what team do you support? The Patriots. And they always hate me. Except for every now and again.
Why wouldn't we? It's the Patriots.
The thing is, people can never give me a lot of good reasons why they dislike the New England Patriots. But I always understand why they do, because I don't like the Lakers. And so it's like that same mentality.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the Lakers either. But no, with the Patriots, I mean, obviously, it's frustrating when they're so successful all the time, but also, I don't like them because they're constantly being caught, you know, playing outside of the rules.
Yeah, they're constantly trying to find some way to bend the rules, and they've done a lot of things.
Yeah, and so, I mean, the whole suspension with Tom Brady and Deflategate, I feel like it's not so much about, you know, just the deflating the football thing, but, you know, the kind of the culmination of all the other things.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, the team was punished, but he wasn't for his role.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's really kind of what that suspension came down to. And, you know, as we found out, this is the other thing, is he decided he's not going to fight it anymore.
Yeah. He's going to take his 4-game suspension and just live with it. And it'll hurt the Patriots for their first 4 games, especially their first one against the Cardinals. Because they're one of the better teams in the NFC this year. At least they're going to be.
Yeah, the Cardinals are going to be good. I don't think that they'll be too far off. I mean, I think Garoppolo can do an okay enough job that they won't, like, lose all 4 of those games. They won't win them all, but
yeah,
I figure they'll probably go 2-2.
Yeah, most of the predictions I've seen are 2-2. Some optimistic ones are like 3-1, but I haven't seen too many people say, oh, they're going to go like 1-3 or 0-4.
Yeah, no, because they still got a lot of really good players around them, and it's frustrating. But no, really, I think that this benefits both the Patriots and Tom Brady in the long run, because they'll do okay without him. Obviously not as good as they would with him, but at the same time, he's going to have 4 weeks where he doesn't have to, you know, put all that, you know, all that toll that it takes on your body on his. And he's getting up there in age, so, you know, a couple of years ago, well, for the last, like, 3 years, you know, at the end of the season, Peyton Manning had kind of been worn out by the end of it and started to drop off significantly. And that was, like, the last few games of the season. And really, taking out those four games, it kind of limits the chance that that will happen to Tom Brady, at least as much.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady still might not have had that happen, but either way, I think this benefits him because he's going to have that rest, and he's still going to have less on his tires, so to speak, than like every other quarterback in the league. And so when it comes to playoff time, he's not going to be as tired from the season.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, as a Patriots fan, I've just been waiting for the past few years, because I saw Peyton Manning slowly decline, eventually, you know, age caught up with him, just like does everybody, and I'm just kind of waiting, at what point does Tom Brady finally succumb to his age? So the guy's going to be 39 by the time he gets on the football field.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't play much further than that, at least not an elite level. I can't imagine him having more than one, maybe two elite seasons.
Yeah, and yeah, I would agree with that assessment. When you look back on Peyton Manning, you know, he set all the records 3 years ago. Then 2 years ago, he dropped off significantly. And then last year, he was pretty awful. So it came pretty fast.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like a gradual thing, like, oh, he's just gradually getting worse and worse and worse. No, it was that within the course of about one season, like, he started, like, he was doing great at the beginning of two seasons ago. And then, like I was talking about, he just, like, sharply dropped off towards the end. And that's kind of why they had struggles in the playoffs against the Colts. And then that was the year the Patriots won. And then last year he was awful, and they benched him for a few games so he could recover from some injuries, because the older you get, the more easily you get injured. And so he was fighting through all these injuries and playing just awful. And even when he came back, you know, he didn't play as bad as he had before, but he still wasn't playing like he had before. He was very less skilled. I mean, I guess maybe not less skilled, but physically he wasn't able to handle it like he was in the past.
Yeah, I think a lot of his injuries that he just kind of accumulated, like the neck injury and then just a handful of things, plus just being late in the season, it being cold, was getting to him because of that. And so, I don't know if Tom Brady will... See, I don't know if he'll have quite the decline, because he hasn't had the same type of injuries that Peyton Manning had.
Yeah.
But still, I do think that there will be some sort of decline that will happen in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and it's the same. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that I think that it's going to happen exactly the same for Tom Brady, but I'm just saying, like, it could happen really quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was great last year, obviously. There's a good chance he'll be great this year, but at the same time, he could sharply drop off this year. You never know.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think that the shortened season for him actually benefits him.
Yeah, I think it does. And plus, another silver lining is that, you know, Patriots fans are trying to see what they're going to get out of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
See, could he be the eventual successor? Is he not worth it?
And if he's just awful, I mean, they can know that they can get rid of him after this year.
Yeah.
And go for someone else.
And they may even get rid of him anyway, because that's something the Patriots have done a lot, is when they've had good backups, they tend to ship him off.
Well, I mean, it all depends on what Tom Brady's going to do. But, yeah. I mean, if Tom Brady's going to leave and they think that Garoppolo can be serviceable at the very least, like, they're going to hold on to him as a contingency while they try to find someone else.
And that is the biggest thing that's changed, is that Tom Brady is really old and he only got a couple more years.
Yeah, I mean, he's only like a year and a half younger than Peyton Manning, I think. Or maybe 2 years.
Yes.
But he's not very far behind Peyton Manning in age.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he's up there. Like, I think a lot of people forget how old he is just because of how high of a level he plays. But it's the same with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning 3 years ago you know, he was getting up there in age, but he set all the records.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's, I think it's getting to the point where Tom Brady is going to start to not be able to utilize his body as much as he used to be able to. I mean, he's gotten to the point where he is extremely smart and knows what to do with the ball, and his body has been able to handle it and be able to do everything that he wants. But I think it's probably going to be more a gradual thing that his body's going to start to not be able to cooperate as much just because of his advancing age. Like, he loses a step and all that. And I think that gradually he's going to have to adjust. And really, I mean, that's something that you saw with Peyton Manning last year after he came back in the season finale. I mean, during the playoffs, he didn't do much for his team, but he was smart about what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't turn the ball over, not like he did during the season. Threw 17 interceptions in like 8 games or 9 games. It was just ridiculous. And he led the league in interceptions last year. But then when he came back from his injury, he was a lot different. You could definitely tell that the injury had been affecting him because, you know, despite the fact that he still couldn't throw it very hard, he was able to, you know, not throw interceptions, really.
He's able to be accurate.
Yeah.
And that's something I think both Tom Brady and Peyton Manning have been able to last this long because less of their ability as a quarterback has been dependent on them using their body. But, yeah, eventually everything just breaks down because they still have to be athletes.
Yeah.
And so eventually they just break down. You get guys like, you know, Michael Vick and guys like that, they just break down in their 30s because their entire game is predicated on the fact that they can move around.
Yeah. I think that Andrew Luck does a great job of kind of utilizing both worlds because he's pretty fast and he can run, but he'll pass over running every time. But so, like, if he's flushed out of the pocket, like, he can run and make you pay for it.
Yeah.
But he's not one that you, like, think of as a run first quarterback.
Yeah, he doesn't just run all over the field like Michael Vick or Cam Newton or all that.
Yeah. And another one that's a great example is Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson, he's, you know, quick and he can get out of the pocket and everything. But what I really like about him is that he'll get out of the pocket and he'll use his feet to create more time to throw a pass.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of guys, they'll, as soon as they're flushed out of the pocket, they'll just take off running.
Yeah.
Instead of, because like once the defense can only, like the defensive backs can only stay on your wide receivers for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to stay with them for an extended period of time. And so the longer that the quarterback can, is able to wait, the better chance that they're going to be able to be open, unless it's a quick route where they're designed to be open. But
yeah,
if people aren't open, if you can still buy time, like there's a chance that they're going to be able to come up, like get free. And that's something that Russell Wilson does a great job of. And it's kind of frustrating because that's one of the reasons why the Seahawks do so well is because Russell Wilson doesn't just scramble and run up the field like Colin Kaepernick would. Instead, he gets out, waits for his guy to come open, and hits him. And it's same thing with Aaron Rodgers. He does that as well.
Yeah.
He's a mobile quarterback, but he uses his speed to create space so he can throw a pass, not so he can just run the ball. And really, that's something that I really like. This is something I've gotten into on other shows in the past, is that I think that, yeah, really, it's great if you're able to be if you're fast and you're a quarterback, but you can't, to me, you can't be a run first quarterback, and that often causes problems. I mean, you get injured a lot, and like even just here for, you know, local schools, both us and BYU, our quarterbacks been like run first. And you know, with Chucky and with Taysom Hill, like these two guys, like they'll take off and run, and they're good runners. Taysom Hill is a beast to try to tackle, but they both end up getting injured because they're running, and they don't use their quickness to create more time and stuff. And it's something that bothers me, especially since I want to be a coach, and like I don't want, you know, my players to get that mindset. And I mean, really, the example is, like, I mean, so most of the time our quarterbacks tend to be mobile quarterbacks and kind of dual threats. And I feel like last year Kent Myers did a pretty good job of this, of using his speed to create more time for a pass. You know, sometimes he would take off and run, but other times he would use it to, he would shift up and then over and find the open man. So it's good. And it's kind of a tangent right there, but.
Yeah, well, I think it's true. And one thing on the running quarterbacks is, I've seen a trend over the past, so many years that, especially in high school and also in college, you're seeing so many of these run quarterbacks that they utilize them as runners as much, if not more, than they do passers.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's probably because they don't have as many good, actual quarterbacks, like throwing the ball. Then once you get to the NFL, you have to be able to throw the ball effectively. So when you look at Tim Tebow, he had his short little stint of success, but he flared out because he couldn't throw the ball.
Yeah.
Even though he's considered like one of the greatest quarterbacks in college history, he couldn't make it in the NFL because he couldn't throw it.
Yeah, and I mean, then that's the thing, is like when you have these quarterbacks that are allowed to continue to be like running or run first quarterbacks, and when you call runs, there are some exceptions, but most of the time your guy's going to get injured, and it's going to, negatively affect you and them, because you look at Chucky. You know, a lot of people thought he was going to be a Heisman candidate his junior and senior year. Well, and then senior year when he came back after getting the medical red shirt. But, his problem is he kept getting injured because he was, that running quarterback. And afterwards, he wasn't the same quarterback and he had a hard time adjusting. You look at Robert Griffin III in the NFL. He did a great job of running the ball as a rookie. And he was a great quarterback both ways, or whatever. He just, shocked everybody. But then after that, at the end of that season in the playoffs, I believe, he got injured. And since then, he's had a hard time doing anything because, he's not able to run around like he was before. And so he's been pretty ineffective. And we'll see what happens now that he's on the Browns because, it's a different system. Maybe they'll be able to utilize him, and maybe he'll be able to, fix what ails him. But, to this point, he's one of those quarterbacks that was great in college, very high profile quarterback coming out of college. The Redskins traded up to get him, and, he did a great job as a rookie, but then he's really dropped off because he got injured. And the problem is with him, and then also with Chucky last year, is like they still try to do the things that they were able to do before they got injured. And because of the injury, they just don't have that same, they lose a little bit of a step and they're not quite physically what they were before. And they have a hard time adjusting and kind of accepting that they have to do things a little bit differently in order to succeed. They have to adapt. But both of them, they had a hard time doing that. And because of that, they kind of had some struggles. At times they would be good, but at other times, they would struggle really badly. And it's another thing that with the NFL is, you can do this whole thing of being a running quarterback in college. When you get to the NFL, you can't really do it because, everybody is so big and fast. And because you think about it, they take the best of the best in college, and only those guys make it to the next level. In college, you'll still... it's a lot higher level of competition than high school, but really you take the best of the best from high school and you put them in college, and then you take the best of the best of college and put them in the NFL, and you progressively get bigger and faster. And so you got these guys that are really big and really fast that can chase you down that couldn't in college because, you were the freak athlete. Instead, you're on the field with all the freak athletes.
Yeah.
And so you have to be smarter about what you're doing, and that's something that... Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, and Russell Wilson have all done well, is adapting. They all can run the ball. They're all fast enough to do that, but they don't. They choose to be passing quarterbacks, and they'll have a longer career because of it. When you look at dual threat quarterbacks, you have to be really good at passing. And Cam Newton is maybe one exception to this rule because he still runs through people and he seems to be fine. And he's a really good quarterback, too. Like, I mean, he can throw the ball pretty well. I wouldn't say he's elite yet, but he's pretty good. But he's able to do that. But it's very rare that you'll find someone who has that ability to continue to play that way when you get to the NFL. But the problem is everyone, like, the majority of systems in college, like, rely heavily on a quarterback that can run. And it just... it comes back to get them in the end, most of the time. You know, you look at the quarterbacks that succeed really well, you know, they tend to have come from a pro-style system. You know, obviously there are some exceptions that they can come from a spread formation or a read option, and they can have some success. But a lot of times that's limited. When you look at Colin Kaepernick ran a read option in college, and even he did it a little bit with the 49ers, but what has he done lately? Like, he got benched.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah, and he, like, I thought he actually looked like a better passer at the beginning of last season, but it dropped off pretty quickly. And so he hasn't done much of anything because, you know, he's used to just running the ball all the time. But you can't get away with that in the NFL because they're just too fast.
Yeah, they're going to catch you. And one thing... I just think, well, these running quarterbacks, you see them come in, and a lot of times they can have early success because, I don't know, they're newer in the league's never seen them before. You get a guy like Cam Newton, and I kind of saw this when Michael Vick came back with Tim Tebow, is they have this early success.
Yeah.
Like when the read option was first starting to become a thing in the NFL and you had so many quarterbacks who'd run it in college. And then they kind of fall off because the NFL adapts.
Yeah.
And the good quarterbacks will adapt to that adaptation and become better. And they'll be able to play better. Russell Wilson is an example. He's been able to continue to improve and be a good quarterback. And so he's still got his job. He's still winning. And
he's undersized.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the prototypical size for a quarterback, but he continues to succeed because of his ability to adapt.
Yeah. And you look at the quarterbacks who couldn't adapt. Colin Kaepernick's one. Michael Vick was, you know, a little quicker because he came in and he shocked the world because they hadn't seen him in several years. And yeah, he was really fast and was throwing the ball really well, better than he really had before. Mm-hmm. But then eventually, the league adapted to him, and he started getting injured because he was a small running quarterback.
Yeah.
And he just fizzled out like a lot of running quarterbacks do.
Yeah, and, I mean, it might be too early to say that Colin Kaepernick is done being effective. I mean, he could figure it out. I don't know that I expect it because... I kind of feel like that ship may have sailed.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a second chance in the league.
I think because of some of the lack of quarterbacks in the league, he'll get a chance somewhere. I mean, Matt Cassel got like a second, third chance, and Brian Hoyer was...
And Matt Cassel never even started in college.
Yeah, that he is a mystery.
He was behind Matt Leinart. Like, he was a backup quarterback and made it to the NFL because of, well, like, the team he was on. And he did a good job that season that Tom Brady was out.
Yeah.
And did a really good job.
And that one chance that he made good on earned him a starting job in Kansas City. And then I think he ended up in Minnesota or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Never actually did anything, but he made...
Yeah, and with Kaepernick, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up finding a starting job somewhere. But I just don't think he's going to be as effective as he was before. He'll probably just be, like, middle of the road, like, this quarterback's okay for a couple years while we try to find someone else.
Yeah.
But I don't expect him to be considered a franchise quarterback for anybody in the future.
Yeah, he probably won't succeed a whole lot.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to learn to adapt. And another example of, you know, not being able to adapt or something that worked really well for a little bit, but then they adapted was the Wildcat.
Oh yeah,
the Wildcat. It was there for like maybe a season and a half. I say a half a season because some people were still trying to do it the next year, but they quickly realized it wasn't working anymore.
Yeah.
Because they'd figure out how to defend it. You know, it shocked everyone at first. And, you know, you could be right. I mean, it might be a similar thing with Cam Newton where he, you know, he was really effective, but then defenses find a way and he might not be effective going forward.
Yeah.
You know, they might find a way to just shut him down. I mean, look what the Broncos did to him in the Super Bowl. You know, you think that people aren't going to use that as a kind of a game plan against him?
Yeah, every team that plays the Panthers this year will be watching that film. Yeah. And that is why I'm really interested to watch this season with Cam Newton, because I want to see how he responds.
Yeah.
To see, will he be able to continue? Because he had his breakout year in his rookie year, and he broke a few records, and then he kind of dropped off for 2 years, and then is risen up again. And I want to see, will he be able to actually continue to be good? I mean, the NFL had a top 100, and they put him at number one for this season, and deservedly so. But I want to see, will he be able to actually still be elite?
I don't think that he should have been number one, though.
Yeah. I actually looked at his stats, and they weren't all that impressive. It's his passing stats.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly because of his ability to be a threat on the ground.
Yeah, and he did have some impressive numbers running.
Yeah, but still, even with that, I mean, I could see them putting him maybe two, maybe top five, but I don't think number one was fitting for him. I mean, I guess you kind of have to put him there because he was the MVP, but Tom Brady's a much more effective player than him. Obviously, I mean, this was done before the playoffs, or at least before the Super Bowl, so you still, I mean, I guess looking at it that way, you leave him up there because of how well the Panthers were doing behind him.
Yeah, I think the team success and just the kind of how everybody was shocked that Cam Newton was suddenly actually throwing the ball well, and it kind of had a resurgence running the ball.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Michael Vick, he came back, people were putting him in the MVP conversation. He didn't win, obviously, because Tom Brady won it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and he had a good season when he came back.
Yeah.
But then, like, last year, so, I mean, they, on that ranking that you're talking about, they had Von Miller at number 15. Like I said, it was before the playoffs, so they didn't take that into account.
Yeah.
And I think that they would have ranked him a lot higher if they had taken the playoffs into account.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the hype with Von Miller is he had 5 sacks over, like, the last 2 games of the playoffs. Like,
yeah, I mean, he was nuts. I mean, he had 2 strip sacks.
Yeah.
Where they recovered one in the end zone for a touchdown. The other one they recovered at the 4-yard line, which they scored a touchdown on the next play on offense. I mean, not single-handedly, because the entire defense won that game.
Yeah.
And they won the most of the games that year, or last year. But yeah, I was really surprised by the rankings. I felt like, you know, Von Miller deserved to be up there higher. And the problem is that, you know, you look at his stats, and he doesn't have, like, the mind-boggling number of sacks that people expect.
Yeah, I saw it. But
you got to take into account all the times that he and, like, that defense is hurrying opposing quarterbacks and forcing them to throw before they're ready or off balance and all that. I mean, they greatly affect every single game. Like, every time that the defense is out there, they're making it tough for the opposing offense. And they were constantly put in bad situations last year. I mean, with, like I was saying earlier, Peyton Manning threw 17 interceptions in the course of like 8 games. And that they were and usually they're like early on in the drive, so the opposing team has the ball in your territory and they're already in field goal range.
Yeah.
But very rarely would they ever score a touchdown because the defense would just lock them down and not let them move, and so then they would kick a field goal. And so, for me, really, I think that was a great indication of how good that defense was. And I feel like the rankings, you know, should have reflected that a little bit better.
Yeah.
You have Chris Harris Jr., who hadn't given up a touchdown to, like, the guy he was defending for over 2 years. He did give up a couple against Antonio Brown, who's an amazing wide receiver. And, you know, Chris Harris had an off game. He gave up like 2 touchdowns against him and then like 181 yards. So it was a really bad game for Harris, and it was a really good game for Antonio Brown. But like, he was also ranked like 86th. It's like, you got, you know, could possibly the top cornerback on the team. You know, he and Tlaib are both extremely good.
Yeah.
But you have him of the top defense in the league, and you have him clear at 86.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense to me.
I think these any rankings tend to favor offensive players, and especially quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And just especially when you look at, like, the Heisman, the fact that a defensive player hasn't won a Heisman since forever, there's only been one of them. When we look at these rankings, because you can measure offensive players by their stats so much better than you can defensive players.
Yeah.
Like Von Miller, like you said, his stat total isn't super impressive. He had, like, 11, which is, like, barely top 10. But kind of the unseen stats, like the quarterback hurries, which they do have a stat for that. But
yeah, I mean, it, you have to like reach a certain criterion. It's not always going to, I mean, they do record some of it, but there's also other times that you can't record.
Yeah.
Like that they still affected the play because like the quarterback knows Von Miller's coming and yeah. He gets rid of it before Von Miller gets close enough for it to be considered a hurry. And so, I mean, there's things like that on defense, especially like where you can't record everything that's going on.
Yeah. It's so much harder to actually record defense in football and especially in basketball.
Yeah.
Where the only two defensive stats are steals and blocks, which aren't really any indication.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think with the top 100, you see quarterbacks up at the top and people talk about Tom Brady being like they say the best quarterback ever. And there's an argument for that. And then the people talk about best football player ever. And I always kind of, like, shake my head a little bit. It's like, nah. Because there's better football players. There's better athletes out there. And I don't think Tom Brady really
should be at the top. Yeah, it's hard to say that someone is, you know, a better football player than J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a beast, and, like, he does whatever he wants. And they double-team him all the time, and he still can get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
Because of how good he is. And he also can jump in there and go catch a touchdown as a tight end. I mean, he's like just a freak. I mean, he's probably the best player out there, maybe.
Yeah. The best athletes.
Yeah. But the best like football player, I mean, that's why it's like it's hard to say the best player of all time for anything really. Where you say you're like one player over everybody else. It's like, well, I mean, can you really say that? I mean, because you got these guys that, you know, they have a different role, so they don't really like stick out as much. Like with defensive line, you know, you're supposed to take up blockers and make it so your linebackers can get tackles on running plays and obviously get to the quarterback if you're like a defensive end. But like a defensive tackle, you know, you don't get to do a ton.
Yeah, like
I mean, as far as stats go.
Yeah, if you're in like a 3-4 nose tackle, yeah, like you said, your job is literally to take up blockers.
Some of these guys, they take up 3 blockers.
Yeah.
But that doesn't show up on a stat sheet.
Yeah, it shows up on the linebacker stat sheet.
Yeah, and people don't look at like how the game is actually playing out in the trenches. They just go off of who got how many tackles and got how many sacks. But you'll have a defensive tackle like Vince Wilfork for years is just super good. He's so big, he can take up like 2 or 3 blockers every play. Yeah. But he doesn't necessarily get to be a part of the tackle very often.
Yeah, the most they tend to get is like in the 50s or 60s, which isn't as impressive as like the 120 that.
Well, I mean, for defensive tackles, I feel like it's a lot lower. I mean, maybe 30 because you're not usually the one that gets a tackle because you've got 3 guys blocking you.
Yeah. The only time you get a
tackle. But you make it so your teammates can get the tackle.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing about football is it's the ultimate team sport because, mm-hmm. you know, everyone has to do their job or you're not going to succeed.
Yeah.
And yeah, quarterbacks are glorified and they're really important, but if the line isn't blocking, the quarterback's ineffective.
Yeah.
You see that like all the time with the Patriots against the Broncos in the AFC Championship. That line got destroyed.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, they got destroyed. And so Tom Brady was constantly on his back and constantly having to throw the ball before he was ready. And so he didn't have a particularly great game statistically. Yeah. He still did all right, and he was still able to get the ball to Gronk all the time. But you know, that he also got hit a bunch, and his life was pretty much miserable that entire game.
Yeah.
And because of that, Denver won the game. And then also Denver's offensive line at times was pretty atrocious. Their right tackle, Schofield, was probably their weak link. And clearly Khalil Mack went against him when the Raiders went to Denver, and he ended up getting 5 sacks in one game off of that guy. They didn't make any adjustment, really. But, I mean, so quickly, if your offensive line isn't working, then you're not going to be able to do anything with your quarterback or running. So if your offensive line isn't good, it doesn't matter how good a quarterback you are. Like, you're not going to have great numbers because, you know, you don't have time to throw the ball. And it's like you can take down any position and be like, okay, well, if they're not doing their job, you know, this is going to happen. And that's the cool thing about football. Like, we're in basketball. I mean, obviously, you need everyone to be playing.
Yeah.
But on defense, the Rockets can get away with having Harden playing Matador defense where he just lets them run by. and they can still win a lot of games because, you know, they have other guys stepping up to at least make it tough for them to score points, and then Harden will play on offense, but then you have guys that aren't good at offense and don't do much on offense. But it's like really a thing where other guys can compensate for someone not being very good.
Yeah.
And obviously it makes it harder, but
it's still possible.
Yeah.
Kind of like with the Heat, where they had three good players and like nobody else.
Yeah.
And they won two championships.
Yeah. But then it's like football. If you don't have a good line, you can't compensate for that by being able to run the ball. I mean, you have to have a fantastic running back to make up for that.
Got to have Barry Sanders.
Yeah. And even then, like, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And even like as a quarterback, like, you have to be able to get rid of the ball quick. And Tom Brady's great at getting rid of the ball quick, but he still couldn't do it very well in that game because the offensive line was just getting destroyed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so, yeah, you got to have – everyone's got to play well or you're not going to win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing is you got to have good offense and good defense. It's like they always say defense wins championships because you can have the best offense in the NFL. Like, there's the – one season the Patriots had one of the best offenses in the NFL. They made the Super Bowl, but their defense wasn't good enough.
Yeah, the same with the Broncos. When the year they set all the records, they go to the Super Bowl, and the Seahawks defense was able to really, really limit what the offense could do, and Denver's defense wasn't very good, and they ended up getting blown out of that game 43-8, and it was never close. From that initial snap when he snapped it over Peyton Manning's head into the end zone for a safety, you know, they're like, after that, there was all momentum was Seattle. It didn't matter that they were the best offense in the history of the NFL as far as regular season stats goes. Like, they weren't able to do much because their defense was lacking, and also, you know, they got themselves down early.
Yeah, you got to be able to stop the offense when you're back up into a corner, like you're saying the Broncos did this past year.
Yeah, this past year, the Broncos' offense was pretty pedestrian and at times was a liability. But the defense was so good that they overcame that and won the game. And so, I mean, it was a lot of fun as a Broncos fan to watch it.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it was pretty boring because there wasn't a lot of offense.
Yeah.
People and that's the thing that bugs me is like that people don't appreciate like good football when it's not flashy or really anything. I mean, you look back. Everybody always says that the Spurs are boring because they don't have any, like, superstar that does this whole, like, dribbling around and pull up and hit a shot with someone in their face.
Yeah.
But they win, and they pass the ball around and stuff. And I think they're super exciting to watch because, I mean, they play as a team.
Yeah, they play team basketball.
And, I mean, the Spurs, like, they have always gotten by having kind of mid-level players that have really overachieved because of the system. But then you just kind of wonder, you know, and I was talking about how you can overcompensate in basketball. You can compensate for people's weaknesses in some areas and helping them out. But what about if you have, like, four guys who are just extremely good all the time? And, of course, I'm referring to the Golden State Warriors. Creating the bigger version of a super team. It used to be Big Three, but now it's Big Four for them.
Yeah.
And we're just going to talk about kind of what we think about super teams and also going to say, like, what it would be comparing it to the NFL and all that. So,
well, I mean, this is something we haven't seen, like, in a long time because you had the Miami Heat in, like, 2010. Like, so that was a Big Three. And you haven't had, like, four really good players on a team since, like, the late 80s with – you know, the Lakers and then the Celtics, which the Celtics were like, I still don't think the Warriors would match them because that Celtics team like had four Hall of Fame players.
Yeah.
And I mean, these guys are all NBA, probably two Hall of Famers. But and I think one thing you wonder about is, are the super teams actually good for the league? And that's something I was looking around because I saw people talking about it and they're saying, well, this is great for the league. I mean, you get this team that's going to have, I mean, enormous success. And I don't know if they'll repeat the 73 win thing because I think there's a lot of things that go into that, you know, health and stuff like that. I don't even know if this team could win 73 games. But they're saying, you know, they're going to be so good and they're, like, over-the-top, you know, championship favorites. And you think, is this good for the league, the fact there's one team that's just going to absolutely dominate and do whatever they want and coast to the championship, basically? Is that good for the league to have such dominance?
Yeah, I would definitely say not, because, I mean, I guess you could see the argument. I'll go that it is good for a second and just kind of play with that for a minute. It could be in the sense that it drives everyone else to step up their game, because the competitive fire in everybody is going to, you know, push them to like do everything they can to get better so that they can beat that team. I figure they'll probably end up near the same win total. They could win more, possibly. It'd be really tough. It'd be tough for them to match what they did last year. But when you've got that much talent...
Yeah, it's in the...
It's in the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
And... But, I mean, really, I don't think that this is going to go as well as everyone that's a Warriors fan or the Warriors themselves really think it's going to go. Because I admit, like, I assume that they're going to do really, really well in the regular season. You know, they're going to be the number one seed again.
Yeah.
But I think in the playoffs, that the lack of depth that they chose to give up in order to get Durant, like, it's going to come back to get them.
Yeah, it
could. I think.
And I think you wonder if Steph Curry's actually going to be able to perform, because he hasn't really performed in the playoffs as of yet.
No, so he hasn't.
I mean, Kevin Durant's going to have to carry that team, which he probably can.
Yeah, I mean, that was really kind of the reason why they get together, is because, you know, Kevin Durant can be the guy to hit the shot at the end of the game. He can be the guy that you turn to and say, like, take us home. They need that, because you saw what happened when LeBron did that for Cleveland, and how the Cavs were able to, you know, assert that there really wasn't a guy that could just, you know, make a shot in your face and, like, just be extremely clutch. You know, Steph Curry, probably the greatest shooter that we've ever seen. You know, he's got a long ways to prove that, like, best all-time shooter. But, I mean, at the moment, he looks like he is. He's still got to earn it, though.
Yeah.
But that didn't change the fact that at the end of the game, he wasn't, like, clutch.
Yeah. He couldn't put the team on his back and just roll with it.
Yeah. And really, the problem was is that he was trying to. You know, really, the Warriors kind of got away with what gave them so much success, and that is passing the ball. You know, they share the ball with each other, and, you know, they find a guy who's open, and they hit a shot. But at the end of that game, they resorted, and this happened with the Thunder as well, and the reason why they lost. They got away from the passing it around and finding the open man for an easy shot to feeling, oh, I've got to go make a play right now.
Yeah.
And so with the Thunder, both Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant took, like, at times were doing this, like, isolation thing where they're like, I'm going to go get the points right now. And it's tough to win like that when you're playing against a team with good team defense.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do really well, and, like, you glorify these people for making these end-of-the-game shots, but they also miss a lot, too.
Yeah.
But the same thing happened with the Warriors. You know, the Cavs team defense was doing a great job, but, like, a perfect example is Steph Curry with Kevin Love on him. Yeah, rather than go by Kevin Love and try to get a layup or drive to get someone to shoot down on him and kick out for an open three, you know, he tried to hit a three with Kevin Love in his face, and he missed.
Yeah. I think it's perhaps one of the things Steph Curry seems to have, like, a fault, is the fact that he prefers the three almost too much.
Yeah. The whole team has that problem.
Yeah. And so it's like he could get an easy layup by going by Kevin Love, but instead he wants to make that Showtime three-pointer with the 6'11 guy in his face.
Yeah.
And
everybody wants to make that shot.
Yeah.
I mean, and the problem is, and I think this is, I think Steph Curry is what's wrong with the NBA. I mean, he's obviously a great player.
Yeah.
But everybody looks at him and sees him checking up threes from everywhere, and he makes them. But the majority of people aren't going to make them all the time. They're not going to be very effective like he is. But all these kids are like, oh, Steph Curry, I want to be like Steph Curry and just shoot threes all the time.
Yeah.
So it's going to negatively affect basketball the next several years.
Yeah.
Until people are able to convince kids, yeah, that doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it might work for a couple kids because they might be really good shooters, but overall, not a great system for basketball. And that was another problem they ran into in the finals. Like, the reason why they collapsed is because they got too three-friendly. I mean, they use the three really effectively all year and do a great job with it. And occasionally they'll shoot one that you kind of scratch your head about, but they would make it a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But when they're not working, you can't keep forcing them up. Like, they're off balance, chucking it up, like they've got a guy in their face, they're still trying to force it up, instead of, you know, finding a better shot, trying to get hot before they start shooting threes. Yeah. And that's why they lost.
Yeah, that's something that, the one stat that I found very interesting is that throughout the playoffs, there were more blowouts than, like, ever, by a lot. There were so many blowouts, and that's because I think the entire league is just focused on three-point shooting, with the Warriors being the catalyst of that whole movement.
Yeah.
And so you have these teams, they're trying to shoot threes to get ahead. They miss them, so they get down, and then they keep chucking up threes because they're behind by 20. It's just the whole league has caught this fire of trying to shoot threes, and like you said, all the kids want to be like Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And it's changed the league because nowadays the old power forward position has basically disappeared. I mean, the Jazz seem to be like one of the last teams that actually have a traditional power forward, you might say, with Derek Favors.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, I mean, and really, the movement itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. It allows more space for guys to slash to the bucket.
Yeah.
But the problem lies when, like, all the guys want to do is shoot a three. Kevin Love, during the playoffs, not very effective because he was constantly standing out the three-point line waiting for someone to pass to him so he could shoot.
Yeah,
and that's another thing that's, you know, wrong with, you know, basketball right now is that people think, you know, I'm just gonna stand around and wait for someone to pass to me so I can shoot.
Instead of
you know, finding a way to get open, get to an open spot, try to get a better shot than just sitting at the 3-point line for 10 minutes.
Or trying to get somebody else open. You know,
set
screens, off ball screens, off ball movement in general.
Yeah, there's a lot of selfishness going on, and you know. A lot of it does come from the Warriors. Like, you have them pulling up for three before they even make a pass. You know, it already, like, you'd have problems with that, with kids thinking that they could do that.
Yeah, you see that in high
But now
school.
It's even worse.
Yeah. It's just, it's getting crazy.
Yeah, and, but really, I mean, I don't think, like I was saying, I don't think that this is going to go as well as Warriors fans think. Because I think that when you get to the playoffs, that lack of depth is going to come back to get them.
Yeah.
You get a team like the Spurs that will defend them and make it tough for them to make those shots. And then when they have to pull those guys out, they've got guys who aren't very good coming in. And so it just allows them to clamp down more on the guys that are going to be threats. And so it's going to be hard for them to really succeed in the playoffs. They might still go through and they might win it all, but I kind of think that they won't, because you know, that's something that the Spurs have been so good for so long, because they've been able to maintain depth.
Yeah.
You know, they've had really good players. They had the original big three, but they drafted all three of them.
Yeah.
But even they weren't necessarily the level of superstars that, you know, they've got the other big threes have been. Mm-hmm. But they had that depth, and that depth really helps in the playoffs, because you need guys being able to come off the bench and be able to do something. Yeah. And I think that with what the Warriors have done, they're not going to have that very much. Like, it's going to be very limited what they're going to be able to do off the bench. And that was one of their strengths this year, is their bench.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, in the end, they weren't able to overcome the Cavs, even with their bench, but... You know, they gave up a lot of their bench depth in order to sign Durant, and so I think that's going to backfire. I don't think it's going to work as well as people think.
Yeah, I do think that their bench was probably one of the biggest reasons they were able to go 73-9.
Well, definitely.
Because they could rest their starters more. You know, I heard their starters just, they had fewer minutes on average than most other, like, starting groups.
Yeah.
And so they were able to...
Part of that was because they got up, like, really big and sat out most of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But also their... The good thing was, is any time they came out, their backups would go in there and maintain the pressure and be able to score still. And they had great performances by guys off the bench all the time. But then they're sacrificing a lot of that in order to get Kevin Durant. And so now, you know, the backup guys are going to go in there and they're not going to be as effective. And they're going to allow the other team to, you know, catch up or get ahead, and then their team's going to be in a hole, and they'll probably be able to come out of it most of the time, but when they're going to go against a good team, they're not going to be able to as well.
Yeah.
So I really don't think it's going to go quite as well as people think. I could be wrong. They could end up, you know, going out and winning almost 73 games again. They could go and win the championship, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if they didn't.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think a lot of people are really too quick to be, you know, calling this one of the, like, the best team in NBA history. Certainly it'll probably be one of the best, you know, calling it, you know, a dream team of sorts, at least as far as, you know, NBA franchises.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I do agree that they'll probably at least get to the finals, probably win it, but, yeah, it's not going to go super smooth.
Yeah. And it could be a thing where, you know, it doesn't go as well as they want. They get eliminated in, like, the second round of the playoffs. And then Kevin Durant's like, you know, this isn't going to work out as well as I thought, and he can leave. Yeah. Because he's got a 1-1 deal. So
yeah, he can opt out
and leave. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're back getting, you know, back that depth that they were next year with Kevin Durant going somewhere else, maybe in the Eastern Conference because it's a weaker conference.
Yeah, go to the Celtics or something.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of my friends would be happy with that because she's apparently a Celtics fan.
Yeah. Well, the Celtics are looking a lot better.
Yeah. But, I mean, and the thing that bugged me is that Durant could have gone basically anywhere else in the league, and I wouldn't have had any problem with it. But the way he went to a team that already set the record for regular season wins, it just looks like he's a bandwagon player.
Yeah.
And that's... when you're one of the best in the world, I don't know why you would want to come across that way. Like, you want to, you know, show how great you are. You know, take a team that hasn't been there. Take a team to beat that team. You know, you could, if you're not happy in Oklahoma City, that's fine. You can go somewhere else. But go to the team that set the record for most wins in a regular season that very year, and went to the finals 2 years in a row, I don't feel like you're adding much to the team. I mean, obviously, you're going to be the best player, but it's not going to be your team.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's a bandwagon move.
Yeah, it pretty much is, and that's the sentiment with a lot of people, is that he really should have just gone somewhere else or stayed in Oklahoma City. I mean, I thought he should have stayed in OKC because, you know, they almost beat the Warriors, and the Thunder made some good offseason moves.
Yeah, I thought, I was like, he's for sure going back because they got, you know, Oladipo and Sabonis, and Ilyasova is all right, too.
Yeah.
So, and it's like they added more depth, and I was like, he should stay. Like, I mean, there's no reason for him to not stay.
Yeah.
And he leaves, and I'm like, I don't think this is going to go as well as you think.
Yeah. At least not in the fans' perception, because basically he's as bad as LeBron now. And people, I think, used to feel that Kevin Durant was better than LeBron because he was, you know, loyal to the Thunder. Oh, and
the funny thing is, when LeBron made that decision, like, he tweeted out about it and, like, against it, and I couldn't believe this. Like, I saw this, like, I was gonna share this on another one, but
did LeBron tweeted, like, criticizing Durant?
No, Durant, when LeBron left. Oh, okay. You know, this is back in 2010. Like, he tweeted out about, you know, not going and joining, like, other teams or whatever.
Yeah.
I gotta find this because I... Oh, yeah, okay. So, Kevin Durant, on the 16th of July, 2010, right after the decision, says, "Now everybody want to play for the Heat and the Lakers. Let's go back to being competitive and going at these peoples."
I think I saw somebody retweet that. Yeah, that's...
And that's a bit so critical. He says that, and he says, you know, let's keep these things competitive, but yet he's going to a team to try to make it so it's not. And it's like,
Come on, man.
But, yeah, I mean, I can understand, like, him changing his mind and stuff, but he did exactly the thing that he said was, you know, not cool to do.
Man, it's just low.
So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, but I do think that he made it pretty clear that his, like, number one priority was winning a championship. And with that in mind, I was like, well, if that's your number one criteria, you go to the Warriors. If you want to, you know, be a man. You know, be competitive.
Be a man. We must be swift as the coursing river.
Yeah. If you wanted to actually, you know, be competitive and do something, stay in OKC, you know, go somewhere else, you know, Boston.
With all the force of a great typhoon. With all the strength of raging fire. Mysterious as the dark side of the moon. Yeah, there you go, people. You're welcome. But yeah, I mean, anywhere else I think he would have been able to, you know, add to his legacy, but I don't think he adds anything by getting a championship with the Warriors. Yeah,
he's just going to get a ring.
I mean, that's what he wants, but it's not going to help his legacy, and if anything, it might hurt it. So,
yeah.
Like, if he doesn't win another championship, it'll be like, he won the one championship, but it was with the team that had already won.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're all out of time. We want to thank you guys for listening. This has been Armchair Champions, our newest sports radio show. So make sure you tune in every week for us. And also tune in tomorrow to my show, The Bullpen. And it's also going to be on Friday. And then Thursday should be You Like That Sports. They haven't been able to do it the last couple of weeks because one of the hosts has been called into work. But I'm hoping that they make it this week. But yeah, I want to thank everyone for listening. I mean, we didn't even introduce ourselves. People might recognize my voice because I'm on like 4 shows. Yeah. I'm Ethan Chadwick.
And I'm Jason Walker.
Jason Walker, this was his first time. And so, I mean, even though he sounded kind of ridiculous at times. No, just kidding. No, he sounded pretty good. So if you've got any feedback, you want to let us know, you can tweet me at Ethan Chadwick 15. Do you have Twitter?
Yeah, I do. It's at DJWalk67.
DJWalk67. So yeah, if you got any feedback or anything you want us to talk about next week, you know, let us know. But yeah, I want to thank everyone for listening, and you know, good luck. It's Tuesday, and so you got a long way to go this week, but you can do it.
Pound it out.
And good luck.